Not because you have talent, but because you're you. And so, you see, this has to be a bloody awful nightmare. And now Darcy knew that indeed Harry was just as innocent as ever, and that if anyone, anything, were to blame, then it was the creature inside him which was rapidly becoming one with him. He would have comforted him then, if there was a way, but he felt himself drifting again, coming apart, and he knew he didn't have the strength or the know-how to keep it together. He was only recently dead, after all.
"I'll be round when you're awake, Harry. Try contacting me then. It will be easier if you come looking for me."
And with that, Harry was alone again, for a while at least. Gratefully, he relaxed and sank down deep into his bed, and even deeper into sleep. As is the way of dreams, he quickly forgot the last one and prepared to move on to the next. Which was when the necroscope dreamed of someone else, except that this time he knew for sure it was more than just a dream, and that his visitor was, or had been, more than merely human, for his parasite responded to this visitor, this other vampire, in typical vampiry fashion, prompting Harry to inquire, "Who are you, that you dare come creeping into my sleeping thoughts? Answer quickly. There are doors in my mind that would swallow you whole."
"Ah," came back the answer at once. "So it's true. You won your fight with Janos, but you also lost. I'm so sorry, Harry, so sorry."
And now Harry knew him. "Ken Layard," he said. "We took your head and burned your body in the mountains over Hallamajew, and you went willingly to your death." Layard answered with a deadspeak nod.
"Death was nothing compared to the prospect of being undead, enthralled to Janos Ferenczi. He would have put me down into ashes too, but only to have me at his beck and call and bring me up again whenever he had need of my talent. Anyway, and as you said, I went willingly, for I knew it would be harder for me if I tried it the other way. And Bodrock and his Thracians were quick about it. I didn't feel a thing."
Harry's deadspeak thoughts turned sour. "But you owe me one, right? The worst one you can give me. Because whichever way you look at it, I was the one who tracked you down, and now they're about to track me down, and so you've come to gloat." Layard was taken aback.
"How wrong can you be, Harry?" he said. "Listen, I know you've been getting a hard time from the teeming dead, but you still have a few friends left."
"You came in friendship?"
"I came to say thanks for Trevor Jordan."
Harry shook his head. "I don't follow you."
"To thank you for what you did for him, and to offer my help if there's anything I can do for you."
The necroscope began to make sense of it. "Trevor was your friend and colleague, right? You and he were one of the best teams, one of the best partnerships E-Branch ever had."
"The best?" said Layard. "So when I died, it was only natural I'd want to keep tabs on him, see how he made out. What I did best in life came even easier in death, and in life I'd been one hell of a locator, which was pretty fortunate for me, else I'd have had a really dreary time of it. What, me? A vampire? The dead didn't want to know me, Harry."
"So locating people you'd known in life occupied a little of your time, eh?"
"A little of it? All of it. I mean, once you get over your fear of death, of being dead, it can pretty soon get boring. So I traced Trevor and discovered that he was dead too, and would have spoken to him except the great majority did a job on me and blocked me out. There are some fine talents among the dead, Harry, and not a lot they can't do if they've a mind. So they'd throw up a lot of dead speak flack every time I tried to talk to anyone. Anyone, that is, except..."
"Me?"
"Exactly. They'll do their damnedest to mess us around, but they don't mess with us. We want to talk to each other, that's fine, just as long as we're not trying to pervert one of them."
"I see," said Harry. "So the only way you could get to speak to Trevor was through me?"
"That's right."
"Except you're too late and your dead speak won't work, because Trevor is alive again, which means you still can't communicate direct, but must use me as a go-between."
"Complicated, but in a nutshell, correct."
"Well, You picked the wrong time. Harry was half apologetic. Try me when I'm awake.
I'll do that, but in the meantime, maybe I can do you a favour too.
Oh?
Harry,
Layard said,
I was one of the good guys a long time before I cocked it, and even at the end I was still pretty much my own man. I was a creature of Janus's making, in thrall to him, yes, but given even the smallest chance, I'd have taken him out if it were at all possible. It wasn't possible, not for me anyway, and so I died. But you'll never know how glad I am that he got his too. So as you say, I owe you one. Not one of the worst, but a good one, like the talent of locating. How would you like to be a locator, Harry?
It would come in handy, certainly, the necroscope answered. I already have dead speak, telepathy, one or two other things. Being able to find someone or thing in a hurry would be a big bonus.
That's what I thought. So maybe we can trade. You get my talent and I get to talk to you now and then, plus a reintroduction to Trevor Jordan. I mean, you act as our go-between. Trevor would like that, I'm sure.
Harry became cautious. What will it entail?
Well?
Layard offered a deadspeak shrug.
I'm already in your mind, in contact anyway, so I suppose you'll just have to open up and let me look deep inside. I mean, I know my own trick, the mechanism which makes me a locator, and if I can find a similar thing in you...
And activate it?
Something like that.
And you want me to open up to you of my own free will, right? Layard chuckled, albeit dryly.
You've played this game before, Harry.
Harry nodded. Yes, I have, occasionally with disastrous consequences. Layard was serious at once.
Harry, there's none of that shit in me. I was still myself when I went out. I don't have anything up my sleeve.
The necroscope considered it, but what did he have to lose? Very well, he finally said. Except, I've already warned you that my mind is a weird place. Don't try to mess with me, Ken. You don't have much, I know, but I swear if you fool around in there, I won't leave you with anything.
Hey, you don't have to convince me.
Okay, said Harry, and after a moment, one last thing. You said you came to thank me for what I did for Jordan. I take it you mean his resurrection. So how did you know I brought him back? Layard shrugged.
Just because the great majority don't speak to me doesn't mean I can't eavesdrop now and then. Also, the dead don't move around too much, you know. But Trevor does, so I knew that what I'd heard was true. You have a heap of rare talents there, Harry. A pity you didn't get Darcy too before they got him.
That focused the necroscope's attention to a pinpoint. He fastened on it in a moment. Darcy? Dead? I thought that was just a nightmare. Well, I hoped it was anyway, which means I have to hope this is too.
You have my sympathy, Harry,
Layard told him.
But it's all real.
No one brings me any good news anymore. Lost for words, Harry shook his head, then deliberately returned to the former subject. All right, Kerr, my mind's all yours. The locator went in and was out again almost as quickly, and...
You're right, that's a strange place, Harry,
he said.
It's as if it was radioactive in there, hot and cold at the same time. But I found what I wanted, or rather, I didn't find it. You don't have the equipment. There's nothing there for me to switch on.
Harry shrugged. You tried, anyway.
But you do have David Chung's kind of mind.
Chung? The sympathetic locator?
That's right. So I tripped that switch instead. Now all you need is something belonging to the one you need to locate. You focus on it and bingo. Except being what you are, everything you are, you'll probably be better at it than Chung is.
Harry nodded, said, Well, I suppose it's my turn to owe you again. Thanks, Ken.
Oh, I'll be back later to collect,
Layard told him.
I mean, Trevor was like my kid brother, you know. And now I'll go and let you get some sleeping done. You're tired, Harry, in mind and body both.
As Layard backed off and faded into nothing, the necroscope's mind cleared itself for whatever else, whoever else was waiting. And she didn't take long in coming. He dreamed of Penny. She was a dream, or just a fancy. Even dreaming, he wondered about it. Was she an adjustment of psyche, part of the pigeonholing of mundane occurrences into all the subconscious slots between forget-it through trivial to highly important, or just a remnant left over from a moment or two of waking lust? He'd known, of course, that the dead girl had a crush on him. It had been obvious even from their first meeting, for after all, how many men get to see their ladies naked on a first date? In Harry's day, damn few. Maybe this was simply the extrapolation of something his subconscious mind had been working on, and should be titled, How Things Might Have Been If Harry Keogh Could Spare the Time and If He Wasn't a Bloody Vampire. Whichever, it was a soothing and blessed relief to his tormented mind after the nightmare of association with Johnny Found, the delirium of Darcy Clark's accusations, and the revelations of Ken Layard. And it brought physical relief too, as he answered Penny's caresses and loved her with his body as any ordinary man loves a girl. The initiative, however, was all hers. Had to be, else his exhaustion must drag him down even deeper into dreamless sleep. And Harry wondered about that too. How come she knew how to do it all? For after all, he knew she was an innocent, a little innocent, whose death he could soon avenge. "Isn't bringing me back enough?" she whispered, guiding his rubbery fingers on her stiffened nipples. "Do you have to go after him too? You know, Harry, I've been doing a lot of thinking since all of this happened, and I mean I've got so much to be glad for. I was dead, and now I'm alive. It would be sort of ungrateful of me to want revenge too. Oh, I wanted it at first, I know, but now I'm not so sure. But I'd settle for you, certainly." He lay back and listened to her, and felt her small gentle fingers tight on his flesh where it throbbed, but lazily as yet like a motor waiting for the throttle. And in the darkness she sat up beside him, crouched over him, and patted him with her hands so that he swayed from side to side, jerking and snatching at the darkness. Are the sexual arts instinctive in some people? Harry couldn't remember who had shown him, or had he just known. Maybe he would remember when he woke up, but for the moment he didn't want to wake up. Here, now, asleep, he was just a man. No more the necroscope, no more the vampire, just a man being loved and making love, and waiting for the sweet sucking thing which was the heart of Penny's womanhood to descend on his silently singing flesh, and hoping against hope that the dream wouldn't fade or change its course, and that he would get to come. The last time he'd made love had been just weeks ago, but already it felt like forever. He felt full of bursting. Maybe it was just being with this girl, Penny, just being human, which from now on he could never be again. And the poignancy of that was so great that when at last, gasping, she actually slid her sweet young body down onto him, he came almost at once, like an urgent youth stroking his first love's breasts. And feeling him shudder within her, the hot spurt of his juices, she clenched him that much tighter until the jerking of his flesh had spent him to the last drop. Following which, the gradual resurgence of his need was slow but sure, and her guidance unwavering, until he was in her again. This time they lay on their sides, and while his left hand stroked, squeezed and compressed the pillow of her right buttock, so the tight tube of her vagina sucked on him for the milk of love and life. And Harry thought, if this were real, I wouldn't dare, for fear of making her pregnant with my damn milk of life, or in my case, my tainted vampiry sperm. And deep inside, his vampire laughed at him.
Milk of life. Frothing spume of lust, more like.
For as everyone knows, only the blood is the true life.
Harry!
She clawed at his shoulders, rubbed his chest furiously with her flattened, elastic breasts. And,
Harry!
She panted again.
I'm coming! I'm coming! I'm coming!
It brought him to climax too, the thought of her orgasm and the feel of its wet, wrenching tremors, But more than that, it brought him to his senses. Suddenly he was awake, wide awake in their sweat and their fluids and the pungent smell of their love, which wasn't fading back into the depths of his subconscious mind, which wasn't the ephemeral stuff of dreams, which was in fact totally, terribly real, because Penny was there in his bed with him. Harry gasped and opened his eyes and shot bolt upright in the tumbled bed.
"It's all right. It's okay," Penny said, grasping his wrists in the moment before she saw his eyes.
Then, "Oh," she said as her hands flew to her mouth. Harry's mind whirled. What the hell was happening here? How had Penny got into the house? Where was Jordan?
"Oh," he finally repeated her. "Bloody oh! Penny, you don't realize what you've done."
He tossed back the covers and pulled on his clothes. Naked, she came after him, drew him to a standstill, and reached tremblingly to touch his redly illuminated face in the darkness of the room.
"When I was dead," she said in a whisper, "they tried to tell me you were a monster. I wouldn't listen to them, because I didn't want to talk to dead people. But I remember they said there was life and death and a place between the two. People have existence in the first two places, but not in the third, which is reserved for—"
"For vampires," Harry cut in harshly.
"Yes, and for their victims, people they turn into vampires, and for foolish girls who through their thoughtless actions change themselves into vampires."
She shook her head.
"But you didn't take my blood, Harry. You didn't even make me bleed."
She was defiant.
"I'm almost 19, and anyway, I wasn't a virgin. I knew a man for a whole year once."
"Knew a man?" he snorted.
"You're a child, and you're out of touch," she hit back. "It's 1989. Plenty of girls, British girls, get married at 16 and 17 these days. Yes, and plenty more prefer not to get married, but simply live with their lovers. I'm no child. Are you saying my body felt like a child's?"
"Yes," he snapped, then gritted his teeth, folded her in his arms, and groaned.
"No, you feel like a woman, but still a foolish one. Penny, you don't understand. I didn't need to make you bleed. You see, there's something of me in you now. It's not much, but it doesn't need to be, for even a little is enough to change you." "Then let it, as long as I'm with you."
She clutched him to her.
"You brought me back, Harry, gave me my life. For what it's worth, I owe it to you. All of it. And I want you to have it."
"You've run away from home?" He put her away from him, at arm's length.
"I've left home," she sighed. 1989, remember?"
He wanted to hit her and couldn't. He thought,
"Dear God, she's in thrall to me."
And then thought, "But she was, even before this. Except we call it a crush.
Please don't let anything of me, of that, be in her."
His head cleared. Sleep and all that had accompanied it receded. The implications came home to him fully.
"What time is it?"
He glanced at his watch. Only 10:30 p.m.
"How did you find me? More important, how did you get in?"
She sensed his urgency and reacted to it.
"What's wrong, Harry?"
And now her eyes were frightened. As he put on the lights and his face took on a more normal aspect, she said,
"When I was here before, I saw the address on some of your mail. I remembered it, remembered everything about you. In fact, you haven't been out of my mind for a minute, and I knew I would have to come to you, no matter what."
"And Trevor Jordan let you in, without waking me?" Harry hurled open his bedroom door.
"Trevor," he shouted, "will you come the hell up here?"
There was no answer, just Penny shaking her head. Harry looked at her, long-legged, yellow-haired, blue-eyed. His gaze took in her firm breasts, thighs and backside, all of her beautiful young body, and the uneven slant of her mouth, which was quite unintentioned but still made her look sexy and somehow provocative. When he'd first seen her like this, naked, there had been ugly black holes in her flesh, but now she was whole again, whole but probably unholy.
"Better get dressed," he said. "And, Jordan!" "Gone," she said, slipping easily into her clothing. "I told him I had to be with you. He made me promise to look after you. He told me to tell you goodbye.
That's all?
No, he also said I shouldn't stay, but when he couldn't convince me, then he went. And he said you would understand. Oh, I remember he said he only hoped that E-Branch, that they would understand too, for his sake.
E-Branch? Harry echoed her, and then remembering his dream.
Darcy!
Who?
She was dressed. She stared at him. Go downstairs, he said. Make some coffee for yourself, and there's red wine in the fridge for me. Pour me a glass.
Harry, I...
Do it now! She went. And when he was alone, Harry sent out his dead-speak thoughts to search for Darcy Clark, and prayed he wouldn't find him. But found him anyway. Found him blowing on the wind, drifting with the tides, flushed away like so much flotsam. And maybe jetsam. Jetsam, yes. Materials hurled from the deck of a ship in peril. Sacrificed for the greater good. The necroscope sat on the edge of his bed and shed several hot, slow tears. It was his humanity, amplified by the overpowering emotions of the Vampiri. Even if he were only human, he would have cried, except then his tears wouldn't burn like the overflow of the volcano rumbling within him.
Darcy, he said, who was it?
It was you, Harry.
Darcy's dead speak was faint as the wind over the sea heard in the whirl of a small shell.
God, I know!
Harry felt stabbed to the heart.
But who was it physically? Who took your life? And how did you die? Not the old way.
The stake, the sword, the fire? No, just a bullet. Well, two bullets. The fire wasn't until later.
And your executor?
Why? So you can go after him? Oh no, Harry. For after all, he was only doing his job, and he obviously suspected that I was a deadly threat. Also, well, it's a fact my own actions could have been more prudent. So maybe it was as much my fault as was yours. But on the other hand, maybe if I'd known I was no longer protected, then I would have been more careful.
You won't tell me who killed you?
I've told you. You did.
Then I'll have to find out some other time from someone else.
Why don't you just steal it out of my dead-speak mind?
I don't just take, not from my friends. If you won't tell me of your own free will, then I'll just have to find out some other way.
But you did take, and not just information, and it most certainly was not of my own free will, so that now I'm a dead friend. Just one of the great majority.
A third party asked, find out what some other way? And Harry gave a small start, but it was only Penny standing in the doorway with a glass of red wine in her hand. She'd heard the necroscope apparently talking to himself. Harry's concentration slipped. Darcy Clark's deadspeak disintegrated. Contact was lost. But Harry wasn't angry, not with Penny. And if he and Darcy had continued, they probably would have parted on even worse terms. "Let's go downstairs," he said. "Out into the garden. It's a warm night. Are the stars out? I'd like to look at the stars and think." He would like to look at his stars, yes, the familiar constellations, for, who could say, maybe it would be his last opportunity. And the stars over Starside were very different. And he would like to think about what Penny had said, for one thing. Did he really need to even the score with Johnny Found? And why the hell should he want to know who had killed Darcy Clark? Darcy wasn't himself vengeful, was he? And then there was Ken Layard and his gift. Harry was now a locator. Well, he always had been, to an extent. Telepathically, he could readily seek and discover others of his acquaintance, such as Zek Fona and Trevor Jordan, and given an introduction to a dead person, from then on he'd always be able to find his way to the person's graveside. And no matter the distance, he'd rarely had difficulty conversing with such dead friends. And now, the teeming dead didn't much want to speak to him any more.
Some do,
said another voice in his metaphysical mind, one which laved him like a shower on a sweltering hot day. It was Pamela Trotter, and she was a breath of fresh air. Penny had come into the garden with the necroscope, but of course she hadn't heard Pamela's dead speak. Harry sent her indoors. If not, she would only talk to him, question and distract him. But turning away towards the house, she looked like she might cry, and so he said, "I'm not putting you away from me, but I need to be alone for a couple of minutes. After that, we'll have lots of time for being together, because I'll have to watch you until I'm sure you're just you, or if it comes to the worst, until I'm sure you're something else." His thoughts were dead speak, or good as, and Pamela picked them up. As Penny went back indoors, so the ex-whore said,
"A vampire lover, Harry? I'm jealous."
Well, he shouldn't be. He shook his head and explained what had happened, the trouble Penny had probably landed herself in.
"Hey, I could use that sort of trouble," Pamela retorted. "I mean, I really wouldn't mind being undead with someone like you, but too late for that. I'm not much up to fun and games anymore. Maybe just one last time, eh? For the right man, you know."
She went quiet and waited for his answer, a long, pregnant pause which defied him to cry off now, not that he intended to. Eventually, he said, "You think we should go ahead with it?" She sighed.
"Well, no question which one of you is in charge right now."
"Oh?
You have the upper hand, Harry. The human, you. For if your vampire was ascendant, you'd have no such doubts. You would know what was right."
Harry gave a snort. "My vampire would know what to do for the best."
"The best for my vampire, maybe."
"So what's your problem?"
She was becoming impatient with him.
"You're one and the same, or will be."
"My problem is simple," the necroscope answered. "If the dark side of me gets its way, the human side loses, perhaps permanently. So maybe I should just let the police have Johnny found. I know that left to their own devices, they'll get him sooner enough anyway, because they're right on his tail even now. But..."
"But we had a deal,"
she cut in.
"I can't believe you want to cry off. I mean, you were so hot for this. Did I let you into my mind to read what you read there for nothing? And the other girls, are they dead for nothing, with no chance to square it? You were the only chance we ever had, Harry, and now you say let the police have him. I mean, fuck the police. Why, they wouldn't even know what to do with him. What, lock him up in a lunatic asylum for a couple of years, then turn him loose to do it again? No! You were right the first time around. He has to pay now, the full price."
He held up his hands. "Pamela, wait."
"Wait, nothing. You chicken shit vampire. Have me and the others been digging our way out all this time for nothing?"
That took Harry by surprise.
"Others? I've made a few friends, and they want to help."
"So," he said, "let them help." And after long, wondering moments,
"Then you haven't changed your mind?"
He shook his head. "Not for a minute. I was just thinking my way round it, that's all. You're the one who's coming on all excited and changeable." She was silent for a count of three, then said,
"I think that just now, just a minute ago, you deliberately let me run on or off at the mouth."
"It's possible," he admitted, nodding. "We chicken-ship vampires are like that, argumentative just for the sake of it."
"I'm sorry, Harry."
She felt an utter fool.
"But it's just that we're all set now, and when I honed in on you, well, it seemed to me you might be reconsidering things."
"No," he said again, "just thinking things through, or maybe arguing with myself for the sake of it. What did you want, anyway?" He could almost hear her sigh of relief.
"Well, I was hoping you'd have some idea when we could expect..."
"Soon," he cut her off. "It has to be very soon now, and to himself, because if I'm going to get Johnny found, it has to be before E-Branch gets after me, if they're not already after me." In fact, he strongly suspected that they were. No, he knew that they must be, and the night would yet prove him right. Harry finished his drink and went back inside. Penny was waiting for him, pale and lovely, and the look on her face begged the question, "What's going to become of us?" The necroscope wasn't sure yet, so he gave her a kiss instead, which was when she asked him how it had happened to him. That was something he'd asked himself time and again, until he now believed he had the answer. Wasting few words, he quickly told her about old Faithor Ferenczi's place in Ploiesti, Romania, the once ruins where an ancient father of vampires had lain, where surely by now the bulldozers had levelled everything and a concrete mausoleum was mushrooming into the grey skies. Except the vast hive would not be intended as a memorial to the evil of Faithor, for he had been secretive to the end, so that no one living today remembered him, but to that of the madman Ceausescu's agro-industrial obsession. Anyway, there was nothing of Faithor left there now, or if anything, only a memory, and even then not in the people, only in the earth which the great vampire had poisoned. "I'd lost my talents," Harry explained. "I had no deadspeak and was locked out of the Mobius Continuum, but Faithor told me he could fix that all if I would only go to see him. I was over a barrel and had to do it, but in fact he did give me back my deadspeak, and he assisted in my rediscovery of the Mobius Continuum. But all of that was incidental to his plan, which was to come back, to return as a power and a plague into the world of men. As to how he would do it, I still don't know if it was an act of evil will or the automatic action of alien nature. I don't know whether Faithor caused it to come about, or if he knew it would happen on its own accord. I can only be sure it wasn't something he himself set in motion, with malice aforethought, or simply the last gasp of his own vampire's incredible urge for survival. All I know is for sure that there's nothing more tenacious than a vampire. The mechanics of the thing were simple. Faithor had died when his home was bombed during the war, staked through by a fallen ceiling beam and decapitated out of mercy by a man who happened upon the scene. His body had been burned. Nothing of him escaped the fire. Or did it? What of his fats? Vampire fats, rendered down from his flesh, dripping into cracks in the floorboards, seeping into the earth while the rest of the house and Faithor's flesh went up in flames. The Greek Christian priests of old had known how to deal with vampires, how every piece of the Vicolicus must be burned, because each smallest part has the power to regenerate. Anyway, that's how I see it. Faithor's spirit, and not only that, but something of the monster's physical essence too, had remained there in the atmosphere of the place and in the earth, waiting. But waiting for what? To be triggered? By what? By Faithor, when he found himself a suitable vessel or vehicle into the future. I believe so, and also that I was to have been that vehicle. Something of him, call it his essential fluids if you like, had gone down into the earth under his ruins to escape the furnace heat, and when I went to see him and laid myself down to sleep upon that selfsame spot, God, I did, I really did, then that something resurfaced to enter into me. But what was it? I had seen nothing but a few bats flitting on the night air, which came nowhere near me. No, I had seen something. At this point, the necroscope directed Penny's fascinated gaze to a shelf of books on the wall by the fireplace. There were dozens of them, all with the same subject, fungi. She stared hard at the books, then at Harry. Mushrooms? He shrugged. Mushrooms, toadstools, fungi. As you can see, I've made something of a study of them. In fact, they've occupied quite a bit of my time in the last few weeks. He got her one of the books, titled The Handbook Guide to Mushrooms and Other Fungi, and turned to a well-thumbed page near the back. That's not the one, he tapped a fingernail on the illustrated page, but it's the closest I've found. My fungus was more nearly black, and rightly so. She looked at the page. The common earthball. Harry gave a grunt. Not so common, he answered. Not the variety I saw, anyway. They weren't there when I settled down to sleep, but they were when I woke up. A ring of morbid fruiting bodies, small black mushrooms or puffballs, already rotting and bursting open at the slightest movement, releasing their scarlet spores. I remember I sneezed when the dust got up my nose. Later, when they'd rotted right down, their stench was, well, it was like death. No, it was death. I remember how the sun seemed to steam them away. Shortly after that, Faithor wished me well, which should have been a warning in itself, and advised me not to waste any time but complete the task I'd set myself with dispatch. I thought it a queer thing to say, that the way he'd said it had been queer, but he didn't elaborate. She shook her head.
You breathed the spores of a toadstool and became...
A vampire, yes. Harry finished it for her. But they weren't the spores of just any toadstool. These things were spawned of Faithor's slime, of his rottenness. They were his dead spawn. But, well, that wasn't all there was to it, for I'd had a lot of truck with vampires too over the years, and I'd learned their ways, perhaps learned too much. Maybe that's a part of it too, I'm not sure, but at least you can see now why you shouldn't have gone to bed with me. A few spores was enough for me, so what about you?
But as long as I am with you, she began.
Penny, he cut in, I'm not staying here. I'm not even staying in this world.
She flew into his arms. I don't care which world. Take me wherever you go, whenever you go, and I'll always be there to care for you.
Well, he thought, and I will need someone, and you are a lovely creature. And out loud, but I can't go anywhere until Found is finished. It's not just for you, but all the others he murdered too, and one in particular. I made her a promise.
Found?
Johnny Found, that's his name, and I have to get after him. He has to die because he's like me and all the others I've had to deal with. Not meant to be. Not in any clean world. I mean, Found hurts the very dead. Isn't dying enough without him, too? And what if he ever fathers children? What will they be, eh? And will their mother leave them on a doorstep like Johnny was left? No, he has to be stopped here, now. Just thinking about the necromancer had worked Harry into a fury, or if not Harry, his vampire certainly. He wondered what Found was doing right now, this very moment. He more than wondered. He had to know. Harry freed himself from Penny's arms, put out the light, stood dark in the darkened room, and reached out with his metaphysical mind. He knew Found's address, knew the way there. He sent a probe there, to Darlington, the street, the house, into the ground floor flat, and found it empty. This was his chance to take something belonging to the necromancer. Would there be a watcher in the street? Probably, but with any luck, he wouldn't be there long enough that they'd see him. Penny, I have to go somewhere now, he said. I'll be right back, a few minutes at most. You're to lock the door and stay right here in the house. His red eyes glowed. This is my place. Only let them dare to...
Let who dare? She whispered. E-Branch? Let them dare to what, Harry?
A few minutes, he growled. I'll be back before you know it.
Chapter 6 Countdown to Hell. There were watchers. Harry chose to exit from the Mobius Continuum at his entry point the last time he'd been there, in the shadow of the wall across the alley from Found's place. And one of the watchers was right there. Even in the moment he stepped from the Continuum into the real physical world, Harry heard the plainclothesman gasp and knew someone was there in the shadows with him. Knew, too, that even now this unknown someone would be reaching for his gun. One big difference between them was that Harry could see perfectly well in the dark, and another was that his adversary was only a man. Reacting in a lightning-fast movement, Harry reached out to slap the man's weapon out of his hand, and saw what kind of gun it was which the other had produced from under his coat. A crossbow. He knocked it away, anyway, sent it clattering onto the cobbles, and held the esper by his throat against the wall. The man was terrified. A prognosticator, a reader of future times, he had known that Harry would come here. That had been as far as he could see, but he'd also known that his own life thread went on beyond this point, which had seemed to mean that if there was trouble, Harry would be on the receiving end. The necroscope read these things right out of the Esper's gibbering mind, and his voice was a clotted gurgle as he told him, "Reading the future's a dangerous game."
"So you're going to live, are you?"
"Well, maybe. But what as? A man or a vampire?" He tilted his head a little on one side and smiled at the other through eyes burning like coals under a bellows blast, and in the next moment stopped smiling and showed him his teeth. The Esper saw the gape, the impossible gape, of Harry's jaws, and gagged as the vampire's steel fingers tightened on his windpipe. In his mind he was screaming,
"Oh, Jesus, I am dead, dead!"
"You could be," Harry told him. "You could oh so easily be. It rather depends on how well we get on. Now tell me, who killed Darcy Clark?" The man, short and sturdy, balding and narrow-eyed, used both hands to try to loosen Harry's grip on his throat. It was useless. Turning purple, still he managed to shake his head, refusing to answer the necroscope's question with anything but a gurgle. But Harry read his mind anyway.
"Paxton, that vicious, slimy—"
At that, Harry's fury filled him to bursting. It would be so easy just to tighten his grip until this staggering shit's Adam's apple turned to mush in his hand. But that would be to punish him for what someone else had done. Also, it would be to pander to the monster raging inside him. Instead, he tossed the man away from him, took a deep breath, and breathed a vampire mist. By the time the Esper was able to prop himself on one elbow against the wall, choking and massaging his throat, the mist lay over the alley like a shroud, and Harry had disappeared into it. Or rather, through it, and through the Mobius Continuum into Johnny Found's flat. He knew he didn't have a lot of time. It depended how many men the branch had up here. They could be coming through the main door of the building right now, and they'd be equipped with all the right gear, too. A crossbow is a hellishly ugly weapon, but a flamethrower is far worse. Found's flat was grimy as a pigsty and smelled as bad. Harry moved through it without touching, thinking, "Even my shoes will feel unclean." First he checked the door. It was sturdy as hell, made of heavy old-fashioned oak, hung on massive hinges, fitted with three locks and, on the inside, two large bolts. Obviously Johnny hadn't intended that anyone should break in, which sufficed to make Harry feel a little safer too. He quickly moved on. In the front room, before a small, grimy window overlooking the now quiet road, he paused beside a cheap writing desk. One drawer of the desk was half open. Harry glimpsed a metallic sheen from inside, but was distracted by the items on top of the desk. A creased, stained, huge-breasted Samantha Fox calendar with today's date ringed in biro, alongside some scribbled marginalia and a hand-scrawled message on a sheet of A4 bearing the Frigis Express logo. The calendar didn't seem especially important, at least not until Harry had read the message on the A4. "Johnny, tonight, a London run. Your Lucky Charm truck, which I'll have loaded for you. Pick her up at the depot 11:40. It's for Parkinson's in Slough. They'll be dressing it for Heathrow suppliers starting first thing in the morning, so we can't be late with this. Sorry for the late notice. If you can't make it, let me know soonest." The note was signed in some indecipherable scrawl, but Harry didn't need to know who had signed it. The date at the top was today's. Johnny had a London run tonight, leaving the Darlington depot at 11:40. Now Harry looked at the calendar again. In the margin opposite the ring date, Found had scribbled, "London run, good, 'cause I feel lucky and this could be my night, and I need to fuck inside a tit." Glancing at his watch, Harry saw that it was 11:30. Johnny was at the depot right now. The necroscope came to a decision there and then. His mad quarry used a Frigis Express truck, his Lucky Charm truck, as a prop in his crazed games of sex, murder and necromancy, and so the truck should likewise feature in his punishment. Very well, tonight would be Johnny's last run, and now all Harry needed was an item from the lunatic's personal belongings. He yanked the desk drawer open the rest of the way, and a half-dozen heavy metal tubes jumped in their velvet-lined compartments. Harry looked at them and thought, "What the?" But as he carefully lifted one of the tubes out of the drawer, he knew well enough what it was. The thing was a weapon, which Found himself must have made or had manufactured, for use on his victims, or for use on one of them anyway. A name had been painted with a small brush in black enamel in the shiny metal. Penny. And Harry thought, this was what went into Penny before Found went into her. The weapon fitted Pamela Trotter's description perfectly. A section of steel tubing about an inch and a half internal diameter. One end was cut square and had a rubber sheath or hand grip, and the other end was cut diagonally to a point. That was the cutting edge of the tool, and its rim had been filed from the inside out to a razor sharpness. The necroscope already knew how and why such a hideous knife would be used. The very thought of it was sickening. As a kid, Harry had played in the deep snows of England's northeast coast. When he was quite small, he'd love to just sit there in the piled snow with an old tin can, driving the open end plop into the cold, soft white bank. When you pulled out, the can came out, and it would be full of snow. Short, fat cylinders of snow from which you could build castles, like on the beach. Except unlike sandcastles, which melted away when the tide came in, these castles would last for days until the weather warmed up. But it wasn't the castles he pictured now, but the perfectly circular holes which the can had used to leave in the snow. In his mind's eye, he could see those holes even now, and they were crimson, and they weren't cut in snow. Harry looked at the other steel tubing knives. There were five more of them. Four were called after girls whose names he knew from the police files but didn't know personally, and the fifth carried the name Pamela. This bastard kept them like mementos, like photographs of old flames. Harry could imagine him masturbating over them. Six weapons in all, yes, but there were seven velveteen trays in the drawer. Found must have the seventh tube with him, except it wouldn't have a name yet. Suddenly, Harry's vampire awareness warned him of someone, in fact more than one, entering the main door of the house to creep in the communal corridor outside Found's door. E Branch? The police? Both? He sent out his thoughts to touch upon their minds. Another mind stared back at him for a moment, then withdrew in shock and horror. It had been a middling telepath, E Branch again, but the others out there were police, armed, of course, heavily. The necroscope snarled a silent snarl and felt his face twisting out of its familiar contours. For a mad moment he considered standing and fighting. Why, he would even win. But then he remembered his purpose in coming here, the job still to be finished, and conjured a Mobius door. He went to the Frigis Express depot. Emerging from the Mobius Continuum onto the grass verge where the Frigis Works exit turned onto an A1 South Access Road, he was in time to feel the blast of a big articulated truck as it sped by. The man at the wheel was just a shadow behind a glassy night sheen of his windscreen, but despite the fact that the legend on the side of the truck said only Frigis Express, still it spoke volumes. For one leg of the X was missing where the paint had peeled away, making it look like E-Press, Johnny Found's Lucky Charm truck. Harry came forward to the edge of the road, was trapped for a moment in sweeping headlight beams where a large, powerful car followed not too far behind the truck. Intense faces merely glanced at him as the car swept by. But there was something about those faces. Harry reached out and touched their minds. Police. They were after Found. They still wanted to catch him red-handed. Or if not that, at least on the point of picking up some poor unsuspecting girl. Fools! There was evidence enough in his flat to put him away for, not for long enough. Pamela was right. He'd probably go into a madhouse and be out again in short order. That other party back at Johnny's flat in Darlington? Maybe they had broken in by now. Maybe they knew. So if Harry wanted the necromancer for himself, he was going to have to work fast. But then he remembered Penny, alone in the house in Bonnyrigg. He didn't know how long this was going to take. He could simply kill Found out of hand, of course, or cause him to be killed in any number of ways, except he'd made a deal with Pamela Trotter, and he still wouldn't cheat on the dead. Also, Found's punishment should fit the crime. But Penny shouldn't be left on her own. Not for too long. They'd killed Darcy Clark, hadn't they? Why was everything so complicated? Harry felt the tension building, felt it swelling until the pressure inside was enormous, then gulpingly filled his lungs with the cool night air and took a firm, deliberate grip on himself. Penny had put him first. He must put her first. He took the Mobius route to Edinburgh. She wasn't in the house. Harry couldn't believe it. He told her to stay here, to wait for him. So where has she gone? He reached out with his telepathic mind. But which direction? At this hour of night, where could she have gone? Why? For what reason? Or had she simply taken Trevor Jordan's advice and walked out on him? He let his vampire awareness guide him, sent probes into the night, spreading outwards like ripples on the surface of a sentient mind pool, seeking for Penny, and found others, espers, again. He snarled at them in their minds and felt the shutters slam into place as they clamped down tight as limpets to rocks when the tide goes out. They'd been close, but not too close, probably in Bonnyrigg, some house they'd made their HQ. Harry passed them by, attempted to search further afield, came up against mental static that sizzled like frying bacon in his mind. It was Ebranch, scrambling his sendings.
"Damn all of you mind spies," he cursed. "I should get out and let you all find your own paths to hell. But I should leave something behind me to make sure you get there, something to give you nightmares forever."
He could do it too, if he so desired, for he had the plague in him. This could be his legacy to the world and race which had forsaken him, a plague of vampires. Physically, his own vampire was undeveloped, immature as yet, but its blood was his blood, and his bite must surely be virulent. And, at his command, the infinite vastness of the metaphysical Mobius continuum. Why, he could plant vampires in every continent in the world, right now, tonight, if he wished it. And maybe then they would wish they'd left him the fuck alone. He rushed out into his garden under the stars and the risen moon. It was night. Ah, his time. But maybe in more ways than one. They were here for a reason, these espers. They could be coming for him right now, invisible under their shield of static.
"Come then, come,"
he taunted them.
"And only see what's waiting for you."
At the bottom of the garden, someone pushed the gate creakily open.
"Harry?"
Penny stepped into view and started up the path towards him.
"Penny!"
The necroscope reached out to her with his arms and with his mind. But her mind was a blur, or rather a mist, in which her psyche hid without even knowing it. Mind smog. Harry felt devastated, but he must hide it. Now she was a vampire, or would be, and now she was his thrall. It wasn't a crush any longer, and he wondered if it ever had been. After all, he had brought her back from the dead.
"What were you doing out in the night? I told you to wait."
"But the night was so beautiful, and just like you, I needed to think."
She let him fold her in his arms. "What did you think about? The night lured you? You felt the first fires racing in your veins, and tomorrow the sun will hurt your eyes, irritate your skin.
I thought maybe you didn't want to take me with you. Maybe you wouldn't."
"You thought wrong. I will. I have to, for to leave you in this world would be to sign your death warrant."
"But you don't love me."
"Oh, but I do," he lied. "But it won't matter one way or the other, for you won't love me either. Still, we'll have our lust."
"Harry, I'm frightened."
"Too late, too late. I don't want to leave you here now," he told her. "You'd better come with me."
"But where?"
He took her into the house, ran through the rooms, turning on all the lights, quickly returned to her, and he showed her Johnny's knife, with her name on it. She gasped and drew back from him. "Can you imagine him?" he asked her, his voice dark as a winter night. "Can you picture him looking at this and remembering your pain and his pleasure?" She shuddered.
I thought I'd forgotten. I've tried to forget."
"You will forget," he said, "and so will I, when it's over. But I can't leave you here, and I have to finish it with him."
"Will I see him?"
She turned pale at the thought. Harry nodded. "Yes," and his scarlet eyes lit in a strange smile. "Yes, and he will see you."
"But you won't let him hurt me?"
"I promise."
Then I'm ready.
1 hour earlier, at Waverley Station in Edinburgh, Trevor Jordan had boarded the overnight sleeper for London. He'd made no plans as such. Tomorrow morning, early, he would probably give E. Branch a ring and see if he could sniff out which way the wind was blowing, and if it felt right, he'd offer them his services again. They'd check him out, in the circumstances, it was only to be expected, and of course they'd want to know all about his experiences with Harry Keogh. But he'd make sure that all of that took time, and by then Harry wouldn't be here anymore. In the event he was here still, Jordan would cry off any work that went against him. Not out of fear, but respect, and out of gratitude, yes, and, if he was truthful, out of fear too. Harry was Harry and a vampire. In that respect, anyone who didn't feel at least something of fear had to be an idiot. The telepath had paid for a bed but couldn't sleep. There was just too much on his mind. He was a man back from the dead, and he couldn't get used to it, probably never would. Not even a man who makes a full recovery from a desperate illness could feel like Jordan felt. For he had gone beyond illness, beyond life itself, and returned. And it was all down to Harry. Unknown to Jordan, unknown even to Harry himself, was the fact that there was a lot more than that down to him. For the one thing that Jordan hadn't taken into account was that Harry had been in his mind. The necroscope had touched upon his mind, fingered it, however briefly, enough that he'd left his prints there, and no way to erase them. To E. Branch, certainly to the two espers who had followed Jordan onto the train, one a spotter and the other a telepath, those prints took the form of a reeking mental mist called mind smog. Of course they couldn't probe too deeply, because Jordan was himself a quality telepath, and he'd know it. Indeed, Gareth Scanlon, one of the two men who shadowed him, had once been Jordan's pupil, brought on by him until his own talent had matured and taken shape. Jordan would know his mind, not to mention his face, his voice, immediately, which was why the two kept well away from him, boarded a carriage far down the train on the other side of the buffet car, and sat for the first part of their journey with their hats on, hiding behind newspapers which they'd already read 4 or 5 times. But Jordan never once headed in their direction or sent a single thought their way. He was satisfied to just sit in his sleeper compartment, listen to the clatter of the wheels on the tracks, and watch the night world roll by beyond his window, and be glad he was once more a part of that world, without once pausing to wonder for how long. As the train slowed down a little for a viaduct crossing between Anwick and Morpeth, Scanlon sat up straighter in his seat and closed his eyes in sudden, half-fearful concentration. Someone was trying to get through to him, but the thoughts were sharp, clean, and entirely human, with nothing of vampire mind smog about them. It was Millicent Cleary at the HQ in London, from where she, the minister responsible, and the E. Branch duty officer were coordinating and running the show. She kept it short.
"Gareth, do you have a site rep?"
Scanlon relaxed his screen of static and gave a brief situation report, finishing,
"He's in a sleeper, coming all the way into London."
"Maybe not," she came back.
"It depends how things are going, but the minister says we might pull the plug on all three of them very soon now."
"What?" Scanlon's concern was obvious. Also his horror that at any moment he and his colleague might be called upon to kill a man, indeed to kill a former friend. Cleary picked that up.
"A former friend, yes, but now a vampire."
And a moment later,
"The minister wants to know, is there a problem?"
There wasn't, except,
"I mean, we are on a train, remember? We can't very well kill him on the bloody train. The train will be stopping in Darlington, and we already have agents there, so be ready for the word. You may have to get off the train there and take Jordan, with you. That is, for now. We'll get back to you."
Scanlon passed a message on to his companion, the spotter Alan Kellaway, who was one of the branch's more recent recruits.
"I didn't know Jordan all that well," Kellaway answered, "and so have no problem that way. All I know is he was dead and now he's alive. life of a sort, and that isn't natural, so we'll only be restoring the natural order of things. But I did know him.
Scanlan shrank down in his seat.
He was my friend. It will be like murder.
A Pyrrhic killing, yes,
Kellaway put in his way.
But is it really? You have to remember, Harry Keogh, Jordan and their kind, they could murder our entire world.
Scanlan nodded.
That's what I keep telling myself. That's what I have to keep telling myself.
In the Mobius Continuum, Johnny Faun's unthinkable knife was like a lodestone. It pointed in Faun's direction. Rather, Harry's locator talent pointed the knife, and he simply followed where it led. Penny clung to him with her eyes closed. She had looked once, but that had been enough. The darkness of the Mobius Continuum was like a solid. That was because of the absence of everything material, the absence even of time. Where there is nothing, however, even thoughts have weight.
It's a kind of magic,
she whispered, as much to herself as to anyone. No, the necroscope answered, but you can be forgiven for thinking it. After all, Pythagoras thought it too. At which point, expert in the ways of the Mobius Continuum that he was, Harry sensed a cessation of motion, and he knew he'd found Faun. Forming a Mobius door and looking through, he saw a hedgerow paralleling a ribbon road that stretched into the distance straight as a ruler. Vehicles thundered by on the metalled surface, their lights strobing the bushes of